Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Zvochim Daf Kuf Yud Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. As we turn our attention to the upper part of Daf Kuf Yud Gimel, we begin with the beginning of the Gemara on the fifth line from the top. The Mishnah had spoken at the very beginning concerning the slaughtering of the Poras Chatos, the Pora Aduma, Chutz Migita, and said that if one does it outside of Migita, he is potter, he is exempt. In other words, the adin of Poras Chatos, or the phenomenon of the Poras Chatos, doesn't come under the category of the prohibition of Shechitas Chutz. The question right now is, what does it mean when the Mishnah says Chutz Migita? My Chutz Migita. Omer Reish Lakish, Chutz Mimokom HaBoduk Lo. If one slaughters the Por Aduma and in a place other than that which was checked for purity or free from Tumas Meis. In other words, the Por Aduma, which was slaughtered on the Mount of Olives, on the Har HaMashcha, was slaughtered, expected to be slaughtered in a place that there was no Tumas Meis. What happens if a person slaughtered it in a place that had not been scoured and surveyed from being free of any graves and the like? So our Mishnah tells us that even if he slaughtered the Paraduma Chutz Migita outside of such a place, a Mokom HaBoduk Lo, he is not in violation of any mitzvah. Omar lo Rabbi Yochanan. Valo kol Eretz Yisrael bedukahi. Rabbi Yochanan says to Reish Lakish, he says, when you're dealing with the slaughtering of anything in Eretz Yisrael, all of Eretz Yisrael is considered mace free, unless something is specified as a cemetery or marked off as a grave, you assume it to be free from Tumas Mace. So all of Eretz Yisrael is beduka. So you don't really have a phenomenon of slaughtering the Por Aduma outside of a checked place, because all of Eretz Yisrael is considered pre-checked. Elo Amar Rabbi Yochanan, kagon sheshachta lifnim min chomas Yerushalayim. Chutz Migita means that you slaughtered it within the walls of Yerushalayim. A moment ago, we said that the Por Aduma was expected to be slaughtered on the Mount of Olives, which is outside the walls of Yerushalayim. That's its official place. Therefore, if one slaughters it inside the walls of Yerushalayim, he is slaughtering it Chutz Migita. The Gemara raises a question, a long question. You can see this length is indicated by the long question marking that appears to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. You see a kuf that's encircled with a vertical dashed line. All of the lines opposite this vertical dashed line form the question. So the Gemara asks, V'lukma kagon sheshachta chutz l'choyma shelo keneged ha-pesach. Why not set up the Mishnah, or why not explain the Mishnah of Chutz Migita is that he slaughtered it outside of the walls, simply not opposite the eastern gate to leading into the Beis HaMikdash. The expected place for the slaughtering of the Por Aduma, the Gemara will shortly prove, was on the Mount of Olives opposite the eastern gate leading into the Beis HaMikdash. The Mount of Olives faced the eastern side of the Beis HaMikdash, and if one were to have slaughtered it outside the walls but simply not Keneged HaPesach, that would also, why should that not also be categorized as Chutz Migita? So let's continue with the question. The Omar Rav Ado Bar Ava, Shochta Shelo Keneged HaPesach, if one slaughtered the Por Aduma in a place other than opposite the gateway, psula, it's unfit, it's invalid. Shenemar v'shochat v'hiza. The pasuk makes reference to shechita and the sprinkling of the por aduma blood. Ma has also keneged haPesach, just like the sprinkling of the blood was done in the direction of the entranceway to the Beis HaMikdash, af shechitaso keneged haPesach, so too the slaughtering should take place in the same location. V'chiteima dolo makish, and if you think to say that he does not compare, that Rabbi Yochanan does not compare shechita to hazor, v'ha itmar, it has it not been said already, sarfa, skipping the parentheses section, sarfa shelo keneged haPesach, if the burning of the Pora Aduma took place in a location other than opposite the gateway to the Beis HaMikdash, Rabbi Yochanan Omar Psula, Rabbi Yochanan Omar Koshera. Rabbi Yochanan says it's unfit, and Rabbi Yoshaya says it's okay. Rabbi Yochanan Omar Psula, and we're dashed underline Rabbi Yochanan, we're focusing, this whole discussion focuses on Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says it's invalid. The Pasuk says, Vesoraf Vehizah. Notice, he compares. He does learn the Pasuk with a comparison mode. He compare the Srefa to the Hazah. Just like the Hazal was opposite the gateway, the Srefa, the burning of the Poraduma, in order to achieve its ashes, must be opposite the gate. Rabbi Shaya Omar Kshera. Rabbi Shaya has a different take on it, but we don't have to emphasize his shita for our discussion. He says it's kosher. The Pasuk says, Al Pirsha Yisroif. And he darshans that to mean, he explains that to mean, Mokom Sheparishis Lemisa Shom Tehe Srefasa, where its life departs it. In other words, after the slaughtering, the animal still flips around, and that's called Pirchus. So at the end of the Pirchus, that's where it's Pirchus Lemisa, there is where the Srefa should take place. But as far as our sukkah is concerned, we're de-emphasizing Rav Hoshaya right now, because the focus of the discussion is surrounds Rabbi Yochanan. And you'll notice we've included these brackets around Rav Hoshaya's explanation because of this, to show that we're emphasizing Rabbi Yochanan. The question then comes to a conclusion at this point, namely, why did Rabbi Yochanan explain Chutz Midigita as meaning slaughtering inside the walls? And why didn't he explain Chutz Migito means he slaughtered it outside the walls, simply at a point that's not opposite the entrance to the Beis HaMikdash? The Gemara answers, Amri, lo mi baya komar. In fact, you're right that the style of his answer is in the lo mi baya, I don't have to tell you form. And the Gemara explains, lo mi baya chutz l'choymo, I don't have to tell you that chutz migita will include a situation of being outside the walls. Derechuke rochaka, you're distancing it from the Beis HaMikdash. Ela afilu lifnim in achoma, even within the walls. Dekeruvi karva, that you're drawing it closer to the Beis HaMikdash. The emo tiskasher, I might have thought that that would be kosher, that that would be a legitimate place of for slaughtering it. Chomash Malon, therefore Rabbi Yochanan tells us that even though you slaughtered it within the walls, it's nevertheless considered chutz migita. And as such, it's not effective as far as slaughtering is concerned, as far as a kosher paraduma. However, it doesn't come under the prohibition of shechitas chutz. And that is, as the Mishnah mentioned, because it doesn't come under the category of El Pesach or Moed Lo Hevio. It's not something that was roi to bring to the Beis HaMikdash in the first place. So there's no chiyuv chutz on that. However, it's nevertheless considered invalid by way of the being a legitimate Por Aduma. Omar Mar. This is a quote from that which we had mentioned before. Omar lo Rabbi Yochanan, v'alo kol Eretz Yisrael bedukahi. Notice we have a little arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. This is to be paralleled with the arrow you find above, also to the right hand of the Gemara text, and you'll see where this quote is coming from. So Rabbi Yochanan said that all of Eretz Yisrael is free from Tumas Meis. On the outside margin, we have a nosei, a topic heading, and we've also noted that the topic is Ad Soif Omid Beis. This is one topic that continues till the bottom of the next Omid of Gemara. Ha'im Yorad Mabul Eretz Yisrael. The Mabul in the time of Noach, did the Mabul cover the land of Israel as well as the rest of the world? Rabbi Yochanan claims Lo Yorad. Reish Lakish claims Yorad. That Yorad means it came, it descended upon Israel as well. The Gemara goes on and says, B'mai komifligi. What is a fundamental point of difference between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, where Rabbi Yochanan says, well, all of Eretz Israel is checked out, means is tumat, is free from a suspicion of Tumas Meis, whereas Reish Lakish feels that unless it's formally checked out, there is a suspicion of Tumas Meis. So the Gemara explains, Moros of our Yorad Mabul Eretz Israel, where Reish Lakish holds the Mabul descended upon Israel, killing anyone who was in Eretz Israel. And hence there is a chashash, there is a room for suspicion that there may be bodies buried at any given point. Umor Savar Lo Yorad, and Rabbi Yochanan holds that the Mabul never affected Eretz Yisrael. And as a result of that, he is able to say that all of Eretz Yisrael is free from Tumas Meis, from a chashash, from a suspicion of impurity as a result of the dead. Omar of Nachbar Yitzchak, Ushnei Mikra Echad Dorshu. Both Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish expound on the following same pasuk. The pasuk in Yecheskel says, Ben Adam, Emor lo at eretz lo mitohara I lo gushama b'yoim zoam. Rabbi Yochanan Sovar atmue matmakra. The pasuk is to be read with a tone of wonderment as follows. Eretz Yisrael mi lo mitohara at Klum Yordu Alayach Kisham Biyom Zam, the land of Israel, are you not Tahor? Did rains ever fall on the day of wrath, meaning the rains of the flood, did they ever fall on you? From the intonation, you see, no, that Eretz Israel is Tahorah. Reish Lakish Savar Kepashte. Reish Lakish says you read it without the intonation of wonderment, but rather in a simple fashion, a straight fashion. Eretz lo tohora at. You are not a tohor land. You are not free from suspected impurity. Mi lo yordu olayach gisham biyomzam. Is it not so that rain fell on you on the day of wrath, meaning that rain did fall on Eretz Yisrael during the Mabul, creating the flood? At this point in the Gemara, we introduce a new geometric form, a house form, and this is explained under our Mivneh heading on the outside margin, with the roof facing, the tip facing upwards. Those are Kushios al Rabbi Yochanan. And with the roof of the house, or the form flipped over with the point facing down, they will represent Kushios al Reish Lakish. So before we go on in the Gemara, let us just take a bird's eye view of what is coming up. You'll see that we have questions, and you can also note the numbering that we've added to the right-hand side of the Gemara text. On this omid, you have 1 and 2 aleph. The Aleph represents the fact that there's going to be an Ikad Amri, a second version of the question, in an opposite form, and that you'll notice on the top of Amud Beis, where there is a Beis in a house form, pointing up, as opposed to the 2 Aleph, where the point was facing down. And as you continue, you'll notice a 3 Aleph, and then a Beis, because on 3 also there will be 2 Lishonos, and Ikad Amri will be featured there. And finally, you'll see a 4, and then another number which is symbol is marked off with a somewhat unusual marking, a dashed house marking, and we'll explain why later. the Gemara continues, Esve. As we mentioned, with the point facing up, this represents a kasha on Rabbi Yochanan. Esve, Reish Lakish, Rabbi Yochanan. Reish Lakish, who said that Eretz Yisrael was suspected of having tumah in any given place unless it's checked out, introduces a Tanaic source. This Tanaic source features or is in the general topic of the Parah Aduma. It may be mentioned that the Parah Aduma, in theory, or let's say in practice as well, was able to be processed by someone who was a Tvul Yom. However, since there is this element of leniency, in order that the Parah Aduma should be taken seriously, a lot of additional restrictions were imposed in the care of the Parah Aduma, simply to counterbalance the fact that the Parah Aduma was able to be done by a Tvul Yom. There was a historical controversy between the Rabbonim and the Tzedukim, and the Rabbonim, in order to emphasize their position, that the Parah Aduma can be done by a Tvul Yom, they used to metama a Kohen, the Kohen who was going to process it, and he would then process it before the sun sets, simply going by after becoming Tomei, he would have immersed himself in a mikveh and right away gone to do the Tvul Yom. So as a result of this lenient treatment, if you will, there was a fear that if we didn't take any additional precautions, the whole topic of the Parah Aduma would be dealt with in a offhanded fashion. Therefore, numerous restrictions were imposed, including the following. We'll see a source that describes the precautions that were taken regarding the individuals who would draw the water for the purpose of mixing it with the ashes of the Parah Aduma. Chatzeros hoyu b'Yerushalayim. There were courtyards in Yerushalayim, benuyos al hasela, that were built on rock, v'tachtein cholul, and under this rock that was formed the ground, there was a hole, a cholal, it was hollow. Therefore, or through that, you would understand that in that courtyard that was built on rock, so that there you wouldn't be able to have any bodies buried immediately under the ground because it was hard rock. And then further under that, if you were to penetrate further down, you would encounter a large vacuum or hole. And if there were bodies buried under that airspace in the floor underneath the airspace forming a type of cave, if you will. So if you can imagine a body being buried under the floor of the cave, it would not affect the individuals above ground, because airspace blocks the ability of the tumah to travel from under the ground through an airspace and penetrate the area above. That's the reason that they found these courtyards built on, we'll say, on top of caves. Mipnei kever hatahom, in anticipation of a suspected, we'll call it unknown kever of the depths, but it's for our purposes what it means. This would neutralize any doubt about concerning Tumas Meis. Namely, even if there were bodies buried under the floor of the cave, those who were above on the surface above the roof of the cave would not be affected. We've dashed underlined Nekevar Atom because this is the point that arouses Reish Lakish in his question against Rabbi Yochanan. Here you see that Eretz Yisrael is not Tahor, is not assumed to be Tahor. Here we are suspecting the presence of graves. The source goes on with the story concerning these courtyards, and it says, Umevian Noshim Uboros, they would bring women that were pregnant, Vyoldos, they would then bear their children over there, Umegadlos Sham Beneim Lapora, and they would raise their children in anticipation of their being needed in the service of the Parah Aduma. Umevian Shivorim, they would, when time came to draw the water for the Parah Aduma, they would bring oxen, the Al Gabe and Delosos, and on their backs there would be doors that were laid flat on the backs of the oxen, the tinoikos yoshvin alehen, and these children would sit on these on the backs of these oxen with the doors on it. The koisah shel even biyadon, and they had cups made of stone. Stone is a material that is not mekabel tumah, doesn't absorb ritual impurity. The koisah shel even biyadon, these children who were sitting on the backs of these oxen would have stone cups. Umilu the yoshvu b'mkom, they would fill up. They would lower the cups into the live spring, which was the source of water needed for the paraduma, fill them up, and stay in the entire time, stay on the backs of these animals. And all of that were function of precautions taken for their avoiding any tumas mace. In other words, after they left their courtyards to go to the live spring, so they no longer were able to enjoy the protection of their homes built over a halal. Maybe on their way to the live spring, they would encounter tuma in the ground underneath the area they were traveling. So for that, they had these doors that protected them from the tuma. And without getting into any details of how that operates, nevertheless, this was an effective way of creating a hefsek between the ground and the tumah that may have been underneath. From all of this story, we see that Eretz Yisrael is not beduka, is not checked, is not tumah free. The Gemara answers, Omar Rav Huna Brev Yeshua, Mala Asu Bepara. Really, Eretz Yisrael is tumah free, but they treated the paraduma with an additional stringency. Mala would be an additional stringency, so as to offset the problem that we introduced earlier, that the Kohen who was to process the paraduma, they were deliberately metame him to make him into a tvul yom, so the rabbanu would show that their approach is the correct approach against the tzedukim who disagreed. But in order to offset that leniency, if you will, a series of other stringencies were imposed, and that's what we just learned about. But they were mere stringencies, and not because of a suspicion of real tumah. As Rashi points out, if they had shechted it in a mokom that was not boduk law, it would not have become posel, because Eretz Yisrael is already pre-checked. Eisvei Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, the house form that you see has flipped over with the point facing down. This draws our attention to the fact that this is a kasha now on Reish Lakish, and the words of the Gemara are pretty clear about that as well. So Rabbi Yochanan asks on Reish Lakish from the following source, Pam achas motzu atzomois belishkas dir ho'etzim. Once upon a time, they found bones, human bones, in the Beis HaMikdash. The Lishkas Dir HaEitzim was an area, an office that had was used for the storage of wood for the altar. Ubikshu Ligzor Tuma Al Yerushalayim, and there was an attempted move to declare all of Yerushalayim being Tomei. Omer Yeshua Araglov Yomar. Yeshua arose on his feet and he declared, "Lo busho klima ilanu shuzertuma al ira v'senu." Is this not a source of embarrassment to us to issue a ruling that our city, the city of our forefathers, is a city of tuma? Aye may say mabul, aye may say nevuchadnezzar. If you think that there's a real problem of tuma, so where are all the dead of the flood? Where are all the dead of Nebuchadnezzar? Nebuchadnezzar was the destroyer of the first Beis HaMikdash, and millions of people were killed in that episode. Where are all of the bodies? So, Midika Omar Hochi, from the fact that he spoke thusly, Lav Lememro Delo Havu, is he not, in fact, trying to say that they never happened? It never existed? In other words, when he says, where are the Meisei Mabul, and he said that in a rhetorical fashion, what do you mean, where are they? Meaning they're not here. So from that point, Rabbi Yochanan shows that the Mabul never descended to Eretz Yisrael. Well, with that in mind, Reish Lakish responds, and he says, and he offers also a long response. We use a length marker, to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. You see Reish Lakish, Reish Lamed, in a circle with a vertical dashed line to assist in showing how long Reish Lakish's response takes, and it takes you to the second line from the top of Amid Beis. Reish Lakish answers, Ulatamech, according to you, that you're trying to argue your point from the source featuring Rabbi Yoshua's response, Haruge Nevuchadnezzar Ochinami Delo Hafu. Are you going to argue that the dead of Nevuchadnezzar also never happened? Never happened? Of course they happened. Elohavu Vehufnu. It happened, and the bodies were removed. Hacha Nami. So too regarding the Mesei Mabul. Havu v'hufnu, the Mabul did descend upon Eretz Israel, and as far as your question is, where are all the bodies? Well, they were moved away. Nehi de'ifni Mirushalayim, Reish Lakish continues to say, granted that they were moved away from Yerushalayim, and hence Rabbi Yeshua was against the declaration of Yerushalayim being a place of Tumah. However, Mikula Eretz Yisrael lo ifni, the bodies weren't cleared away from all of Eretz Yisrael, and hence my position, says Reish Lakish, that with when you're dealing with Eretz Yisrael, there is room to suspect the presence of the dead. Iko di Amri, there is another version of this. Esve Reish Lakish Rabbi Yochanan, you'll see that this is an opposite approach. And the form, the house form, you can see with the point facing up, indicates a kasha on Rabbi Yochanan. So Reish Lakish asks on Rabbi Yochanan, Aye Meise Mabul Aye Meise Nebuchadnezzar. This is a quote from the same source we just got finished with Rabbi Yeshua featured in it. And we see from here, My Lav, Mi Dehani Havu, just like the Meise Nebuchadnezzar, the dead, at the time of the temple destruction at the hands of Nebuchadnezzar definitely were Hani Nami Havu, the Mesei Mabul also were. They were there in Eretz Yisrael. Like Reish Lakish says. Rabbi Yochanan responds, Midi Irya, is one example necessarily forces the same explanation for the other example? Ha-kidi-isei. The Meisei Nebuchadnezzar were as they were, namely they were in Eretz Yisrael. However, the Meisei Mabul were as they were, namely not in Eretz Yisrael. The fact that Rabbi Yeshua cites two examples doesn't mean that they are perforce the same situation. Esvei, we have a new house form with the point facing up, indicating this will be a kasha on Rabbi Yochanan. We've also called this 3 Aleph, as you can see to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara. This is in anticipation of the Ika the Amri that appears later, where you'll notice the Beis is positioned a few lines down with an inverted house form. So Esve, the question is raised against Rabbi Yochanan. Mikol asher b'chorovo mesu. The Pasuk in describing the flood, it says, and all those that were on dry land died. Bishlama ledidi, says Reish Lakish, things work out according to me, diamina yorad mabul Eretz Yisrael, mishumachi mesu. I claim that Eretz Yisrael suffered the flood as well as the rest of the world. Therefore, the Pasuk declares, everything that was on dry land died, meaning everyone, absolutely everyone, including those in Eretz Yisrael. El Idcha, but according to you, Rabbi Yochanan, that the Mabul didn't affect Eretz Yisrael, Amai Mesu. Why did they die? Why, the Pasuk declares, everyone died. But if the Mabul didn't descend into Eretz Yisrael, the people there didn't die. Rabbi Yochanan answers, Mehevla. The Mabul itself, the waters, did not inundate Eretz Yisrael. However, there was an extreme heat that was suffered, and from the heat they perished. Kid Rav Chisda, based on Rav Chisda's teaching, Dom Rav Chisda, Beroyschin Kilkulu, Uberoyschin Nidonu. Kilkulu Beshichva Zera, Uberoyschin Nidonu. The generation of the flood had violated the ways of Hashem through roisin, through immorality. That's what's indicated by kilkulu b'shichva zera, and they were measure for measure. They were judged through roisin, through boiling water, through which represents heat for our discussion. Ksiv hocha vayoshochu hamayim. It says in the context of a flood, vayoshochu hamayim. Uksiv hosam v'chamas hamelech shochocha. The wrath of the king was assuaged, diminished. So that you see where the word vayoshochu or shechocha is used, that indicates there had been heat. Just like in the case of the king's wrath, in Megillas Esther we see Ahasuerus had been full of wrath, and wrath is associated with heat. We say that we use the expression hot under the collar, indicating anger. So the subsiding of the anger, you see the word shechocha used. Hence, in the case of the floodwaters, where the word vayoshochu appears, it shows that the floodwaters or the waters cooled off from their previous heat situation. So, with that, we understand Rabbi Yochanan's response to Reish Lakish that everyone died, even those people inhabiting Eretz Yisrael, but not as a result of the waters, of the floodwaters descending there, but rather because of the heat. Ika the Amri. An opposite version, another version of this proof is flipped around, where Rabbi Yochanan uses this to respond to Reish Lakish. Eisvei Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, Mikol Asher Becharova Mesu. Bishlo Didi, according to me, says Rabbi Yochanan, Amina Lo Yorad Mabul Eretz Yisrael, that the floodwaters never descended upon Israel, Mishum Hochi Havi Charova. Therefore, it was dry. So the pasuk in describing the flood says that all those on the dry land died. Well, where was their dry land during a flood? The answer is in Eretz Yisrael. So the description of dry land during the flood conforms to my approach that says that the flood waters never inundated Eretz Yisrael. But according to you, that the Mabul covered the entire word in clear Eretz Yisrael, what is the significance, or what's the meaning of the word dry, charova? Answer, charova shehoisa mekara. The term dry land is a reference to that land which was dry before the Mabul. However, during the Mabul, everything, including Eretz Yisrael, became inundated. The Amai Kori Le Charova. Why is the word Charova used in the first place? If all the intention right now is to talk about that which had been dry initially, there is really no absolute purpose to use the word Charova and simply say Kula Mesu. Why do you emphasize everything that was on dry land died? Just simply say everyone died. So the Gemara answers Kidur Rav Chisda. The answer to why the Torah uses the word Chorva is based on his teaching. The Omer Rav Chisda, B'dor HaMabul Lo Nigzira Gzera Al Dogim Shebiyam. In the generation of the flood, the heavenly decree that everything should die did not include sea creatures, the Dogim Shebiyam. Shinemar, as the Pasuk says, Mikol Asher Bechorova Mesu. All those on dry land, those land creatures died. Below Dogim Shebiyam, but not sea creatures. With the as the Gemara continues, you see a house marking with the point facing down. We understand this to be a kasha on Reish Lakish. Bish Lamolamanda Omar Lo Yorad Mabul Eretz Yisrael. With Rabbi Yochanan's approach, who said that the flood did not inundate Eretz Yisrael. There's a massive creature called, in this Gemara, called Rima, or the Re'en. This massive creature, which didn't go into Noah's ark, the boat that Noah made, it survived the flood by standing in Eretz Yisrael. That's the Hainu Dekom Rima Hosam. It stood in Eretz Yisrael and was spared. Elo Lamandomar Yorad Rima But according to the Mandamar that says, Mandamar Yorad, the Mandamar that says that the flood inundated Eretz Yisrael, Rima Hecha Kom. Where did the Rima stand? Where? How did it survive? The assumption, of course, is that since this is such a massive creature, it could never have been fit into the boat that Noah made. We have a bracketed section. If we skip it momentarily, we'll get to the real answer, the accepted answer for how the Rima survived, according to Reish Lakish, that even Eretz Yisrael was inundated. It says after the bracketed section, Nes Nas Elohim Shenitstanenu Betside Ateva, a miracle took place. That the boiling hot waters were cooled off in the area around the Noah's Ark itself, so that the Re'em didn't have to go into the Teva. All that it was necessary for it was to be near, in the proximity of the Teva, and thereby experiencing the cool waters, and hence surviving. What we just did, of course, is we skipped the bracketed section. If that wasn't 100% clear, we should have mentioned earlier that there is a length indicator that you can see to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, a vertical dashed dotted line indicating the length of the bracketed section. Before we go further, let's glance at the side of our Gemara. We have a nosei, and we've also indicated that the topic we want to address is Toch HaSograyim, the section that's within the brackets, is featured here under our topic heading, Eich Nitzol HaRe'im, Lefishitas Reish Lakish Diyar HaMabel Al Kol HaOlam Kolel Eretz Yisrael. How was the massive creature, the Re'im, saved, or how did it survive the flood, according to Reish Lakish, that Eretz Yisrael was inundated as well? So in our initial presentation of the Gemara, we already read the answer, but the Gemara will have numerous stages before we get to that answer. And we also have a mivneh, a structural note in the outside margin. You see a triangle featured, and the triangle that you see is appears in two positions, and you may have noticed that by scanning ahead in the Gemara, where triangles were appearing in a flip-flop position, and a double underline also appears. This triangle is a ma'akav, represents an attempt to keep track of a discussion. So with the point facing up, this represents tshuvos l'she'elo hanal. These are answers, attempted answers to the question regarding the survival of the Re'im according to Reish Lakish. And with the point flipped over, facing downwards, this represents kushios and dechios, either questions or rejections. So as we go on in the Gemara, we will notice the use of the double underline is to show the answer. And if you skim ahead, you'll notice there's a number 1, which says Gurios, and number 2, Roishoi, and number 3, Roish Choitmoi, and the number 4 eventually is the final answer, Shinitstanenu Betside Hateva. Turning now to the bracketed section. The question was, how did the Re'im survive, according to Reish Lakish, that Eretz Yisrael was inundated as well? Om Rabbi Yanai, Gurios Ichnisu Bateva. Noach brought into the Teva Re'im puppies, if you will, small ones, newborn. Newborn, that's Gurios, newborn Re'im. The Gemara asks, but that isn't possible, because the size of a newborn Re'im is vast, is much larger than the Teva, whose dimensions are known through Psukim in the Torah. V'homar Rabo Bar Chano. This question that Rabo raises, or that's raised in the name of Rabo, is a long question. You can see to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara, we have a long question marking. So bear in mind that all of these lines show how the Rav Yanai suggestion is untenable. The Omar Rabba Bachana Lididi Chozili Urzila Derima Bas Yoima. I saw a newborn Re'im. That's the Urzila Derima. The newborn Re'im is one day old, and its size Vahavi Kahar Tavor. It was the size of Mount Tavor. Fahar Tavor Kamahavia, and how big is Mount Tavor? Arboyan Parsi, it's 40 parsa. which for our purposes would amounts to many, many kilometers. Mashcha de Tzavre, the length of its neck, Tlosa Parsis, three parsa. Three parsa would be the equivalent of maybe 12 kilometers. Marbasa de Resha, the location or the size of the area where it places its head down, if this newborn rain were to put its head to rest, the area taken up by the Marbas de Resha, the place that its head lies, Parsa Upalga is 1.5 parsa. Again, it's a vast area as far as we are concerned. You're dealing with a boat that just numbered several hundred amos, which is much, much smaller than these dimensions. And another description of this Re'im is Rama Kova Vesachar Yardana. It laid some solid waste, and that solid waste of this animal was able to dam up the Jordan River. For our purposes, the Gemara is describing even a newborn Re'im as something far larger than anything the Teva of Noach, the boat of Noach, could have dealt with. So the question is, how did it survive if even Eretz Yisrael was inundated? Om Rav Yochanan, Roishoi Hichnisu LaTeva. They had its head go into the boat. Well, but we just learned that that's not possible. It was just taught. Marbas of the Resha, Parsu Palga. The area on which its head lay was itself a Parsu Palga, which would be a six mil, which might be equal to 6 kilometers. Elo, Roish Chaitmoy Hichnisu LaTeva. The Re'im's nostril was put into the boat. If it's internal brackets, if we skip them momentarily, we will see a question on this answer. How can you suggest that it was saved by its nostril being put into the boat? V'ho kosagya teva. The boat was in constant movement. So how could its nostril stay in the boat? The Gemara will answer, Amar Reish Lakish karnov koshru b'teva. Before we go on any further, Gemara, let's go over this internal brackets by going back to the number 3, Elo, the Gemara answered, Roish Choitmoy Hichnisu LaTeva. The Gemara asks, but V'homer Rabbi Yochanan? Rabbi Yochanan being the name that was most recently featured as giving an answer, his name was dashed, underlined, under a triangled Rabbi Yochanan. He had offered the answer that they stuck its head in the Teva, but that itself was rejected, therefore the revised version of Rabbi Yochanan is they put its nostril in the teva. But since we're dealing with Rabbi Yochanan himself as suggesting this revised answer, this is assuming that the Re'im needed special salvation in view of the fact that all of Eretz Yisrael was inundated. But V'ha Omar Rabbi Yochanan, looking in the bracketed section, you see V'ha Omar Rabbi Yochanan Lo Yorad Mabel Eretz Yisrael, but Rabbi Yochanan himself said that Eretz Yisrael was not inundated. Therefore, the survival of the Re'im was ensured by its being in Eretz Yisrael. It didn't need all of this. So why is Rabbi Yochanan saying over here that they stuck its nostrils into the Teva? The Gemara answers, L'divrei Reish Lakish Komar. Rabbi Yochanan, in this current discussion, who mentioned that they put the nostrils in the Teva, was a point in defense or in terms of Reish Lakish. In Reish Lakish terms, he said this. So, namely, that according to you, that Eretz Yisrael was inundated, the survival of the rain could still be explained by its nostrils being put into the Teva. The Gemara asks, but even so, V'ha Kosagya Teva, but the Teva was in constant movement. So, how could the Re'im survive? Its nose would have slipped out of the Teva. Amar Reish Lakish, Karnov Koshru B'Teva. They tied its horns to the boat. V'amar Rav Chista, Anshe Dor HaMabul B'Rosh V'Kehul B'Rosh Nidonu. Rav Chista says, but even so, even if it was tied to the boat, but was it? We mentioned before that the heavenly decree included the waters were to be boiling also. So what? It was tied to the boat, but nevertheless its body was in boiling waters, and it would have died anyway. The response to that is, ul'tamech tevo hechi sagyo. If it was boiling hot, so the tar that was used to coat the boat would have melted off, and the boat would have been destroyed. The oid melech haboshan hecha koi. And furthermore, how do you explain the survival of Og, who was a giant, and he survived the flood? How do you explain that? So Ela Nes Nase Lohem. Rather, the real answer is that a miracle took place for them. Shenitstanenu b'tzidei hateva. They were cooled off at the sides of the boat, and therefore they didn't need to be in the boat per se. All that was necessary was that they were always near the boat. And Rashi adds, because of their great height, they didn't drown either. So they experienced coolness and were thereby saved. This symbol, this dashed, inverted house form, is explained by our note. Next to the singular star, you can see in the outside margin, Tam Likivkuv. The reason for this is, Nira Li, the Iker She'ela Zu, Mechuvenes al Hatoitzao Shel Shitas Reish Lakish, Velo al Iker Shitasa. The focus of this question is on the outcome of his opinion, and not on the basic opinion. Namely, Demeachar Shiara Mabul Beretz Yisrael, after, as Reish Lakish claims, the flood inundated the land of Israel, Yesh Lachshosh Lemesim, one should concern themselves with the dead, but Vaha Lo Posh, but they didn't remain. So that even though Reish Lakish says that the land was flooded, and as a result of that he wanted to say that there is a suspicion of Tumah regarding all of Eretz Israel, but the bodies didn't remain there, and this will be explained in the Gemara itself, that will appear in a bracketed section where Reish Lakish himself is quoted as describing Bovel as by the term Mitsula, which indicates that all the bodies of the dead from the Mabul descended to that area of the world. So the question then is, how is it that Reish Lakish feels that there is a suspicion of Tumah in all of Eretz Israel, when he himself claims that the bodies did not remain in Eretz Israel? Let's read this now in the Gemara. Ule Reb Shimon ben Lakish. According to Reish Lakish, Nehi Nami Diyorad Mabul Eretz Yisrael. At this point, as we said, the Gemara is not challenging that, but rather we're challenging his conclusion. He concluded that there is room to suspect Tumas Meis in all of Eretz Yisrael, but V'halo Posh, the bodies didn't remain there. We have these brackets to enable you to see that essentially the basic question has been raised. And after the brackets appears the answer. The Gemara there says, after the brackets, whose length you can see by the length indicator to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, with the dashed dotted vertical line, after the brackets it says, an answer, E'efshur delo idbiku. If you'll ask, how does Reish Lakish suspect Eretz Yisrael as being a place of Tumas Meis, he will tell you it became very muddy, and even though many bodies, as the waters receded, floated down to Mitsula, to Bovel, nevertheless, some got stuck in the mud that remained after the deluge. So they got those, it's because of those bodies that got stuck, there is room to suspect Tumas Meis. Let's now go over this section of Gemara in the text. The Gemara asked, according to Reish Lakish, granted that the Eretz Yisrael was inundated as well, but v'ha lo posh. The Gemara, right before the brackets, raises the issue of, but the bodies didn't remain there, so why does Reish Lakish say that Eretz Yisrael is a place of Tumas Meis as well? The Omar Reish Lakish, at this point, the Gemara shows how even Reish Lakish himself indicates that bodies did not remain in Eretz Israel. Reish Lakish is recorded as having said, Lama Nikra Shma Metzula, why is Bavel termed by the name Metzula, meaning the depths? Shekol Meisei Mabul Nitztalalu Sham, that all the dead from the great deluge, they floated down to the depths of Bavel. So all the bodies were, let's say, as a result of the receding waters, they drifted down to the depths of Bavel. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Lama Nikra Shma Shinar, why is Bavel termed by this other name, Shinar? Shekol Meisei Mabul Nin Arusham, all the dead from the Mabul, wherever they were, moved over, Nin Arus, they moved over there, they, for our purposes, they floated over to Bavel, and that's where they remained. We have a little one in a diamond over the word Shinar, because the Gemara itself will give us another explanation for the name Shinar a little bit later. But at this point, though, the question is clear. According to Reish Lakish, whose name we've also focused on with a dashed underline, he himself says that bodies did not remain in Eretz Yisrael. They floated down to the depths of Bavel. So why does he say or suggest that Eretz Yisrael is, there is room to suspect Tumas Meis? Answer. It's impossible that bodies did not get stuck in the mud, in the tit. Omer Bivo, Lama Nikra Shma Shinar, why is Bavel referred to by the term Shinar? Sheminaeris Ashireha. It shakes out its wealthy. Rashi explains, based on a Gemara, that in Bavel, the wealthy of Bavel were not compassionate for others, and as a result of that, wealth doesn't exist in Bavel. Anyone who's wealthy is cast out. The Gemara asks, but v'ha kochazino diga, but we see there are wealthy people in Bavel. The Gemara answers, at losa dori lo mashvi. They don't last three generations. In other words, if there were wealthy people, but the wealth did not continue in any given family for three generations. Omar Rabbi Ami, kol ha'oichel me'afro shel Bavel, anyone who eats the dirt of Bavel, ki'ilu oichel besar avoisov, it's as if he's eating the remains or the flesh of his forebears. The forebears, in this case, a reference to the Dor Hamabul, the people, the generation of the flood. Tanyun Ami Hachi, kol ha'oichel me'afro shel Bavel, anyone who eats from the dirt of Bavel, ki'ilu oichel besar avoisov, it's as if he's eating the flesh of his forebears. V'yeshomim ki'ilu oichel shkotzim uramasim. Another version is, it's as if he's eating the dead creatures, shkotzim uramasim, different types of creepy crawling creatures. For our purposes, it means the dead creatures from Bavel. Everything descended, we said before, descended to Bavel, including all land life. Hence, the dirt of Bavel is absorbed with a great deal of dead creatures. Hence, eating the dirt of Bavel is tantamount to eating these creatures. We learned in our Mishnah on Kuf Yud Beis Omer Aleph that one who slaughters a Soyer HaMishtaleach outside the Beis HaMikdash, he is not guilty of Shechitas Chutz. And from the Mishnah, we saw that the Soyer HaMishtaleach was excluded from Shechitas Chutz based on the pasuk of El Pesach Oel Moed Lo Hevio. When is there a violation of Shechitas Chutz that regards something that could have been brought to the Pesach Oel Moed and was not brought? Something that was designed to be brought El Pesach Oel Moed and was not brought. But the Soyer HaMishtaleach was not designed to be a sacrifice in the first place. Hence, it doesn't fall under the prohibition of Shechitas Chutz. Once again, let us just focus on the main point. Right now, we, having learned the Mishnah, discovered that the Soyer HaMishtaleach was excluded based on the pasuk of El Pesach Ol Moed. We are going to see very shortly a Tanaic source, the next framed section. At the very end of this framed section, it says, in this Tanaic source, it says, Talmud Loimer Lashem. Lahoitzi Soya Mishtalech Shenu Myuchod Lashem. The Soya Mishtalech is excluded from the problem or from the Isser of Shechitas Chutz based on another phrase, namely, not El Pesach Moy El Moy Lovio, but rather based on the phrase or the word Lashem. We saw, in fact, in the Mishnah, Lifnei Mishkan Hashem, we saw that, but as far as our Mishnah was concerned, that was not used to exclude the Sarmish Taleach. The Pasuk of El Pesach Ol Moed was the source of exclusion. So, continuing now in the Gemara, Viramini, the Gemara now raises a contradiction to what we said our Mishnah taught. The source opens up with a pasuk dealing with shchutei chutz, the prohibition of slaughtering sacrifices outside the Beis HaMikdash. It says, oi korban. Shomeani, I would learn from this, afilu koche berek habayis shenikru korban, shenema venikrav is korban Hashem. We find elsewhere in the Torah, the word korban is used to include things sanctified to the temple repair fund. So is one to suggest that a creature that was dedicated to the temple treasury, to the temple repair fund, if one were to slaughter that outside the Beis HaMikdash, that would incur be a violation of Shechitas Chutz? We know that that's not the case. But if you're focusing on the word korban and things dedicated to the temple treasury are also termed by the word korban, why not include them as well in the Isser of Shechitas Chutz? Talmud Lomar. So we answer, Ve'el Pesach Ol Moed Lo Hevio. Mi Sheroi Lovo LePesach Ol Moed. What is included under the prohibition of Shechitas Chutz? Those things that were fit to be brought to the entrance, to be brought to within the walls of the Beis HaMikdash. Yatsu Kotche Benek Abayas Shenon Ru'uyin LePesach Ol Moed. This is to the exclusion of things dedicated to the temple treasury. Those things were not to be brought necessarily into the confines of the Beis HaMikdash. In the case of Berek Abayas, our main interest is the value of whatever was dedicated. The monies fetched from them through their sale or redemption, that is what went to the Beis HaMikdash. But the items themselves were not fit to be brought the Pesach Ol Moed. Continuing, Oitzias Elu She'enurin, I will exclude from the problem of Shechitas Chutz, Elu, the Berek Abayas, the Kotche Berek Abayas. However, v'lo otzi es soya mishtaleach shu roi levo el pesach moed. But maybe I won't exclude the soya mishtaleach, which is the goat that was sent away on Yom Kippur to the cliff outside of Yerushalayim to carry with it the sins of Israel. That, after all, is something that was fit to be brought into the Beis HaMikdash. So maybe, since it comes under the Psar Mishlech, without getting into too much detail, was in fact brought into the courtyard, into the Azor of the Beis HaMikdash. There were lots drawn in order to define which of the... There were two goats that were present there. One was determined through the drawing of the lots to be the Soyer HaMishtalech, the goat sent out, and the other one of the two goats was determined through the lots to be offered as a Chatos sacrifice. Nevertheless, what is the main point? What about the Soyer HaMishtalech? But if someone slaughters that outside the Beis HaMikdash, maybe, since it is Roy Lovo Pesach Ol Moed, it would be under the prohibition of Shechitas Chutz. Talmud Loimar Lashem. Therefore, the Pasuk indicates, regarding Shechitas Chutz, also it says Lashem. Lahotzi Soyer HaMishtalech. This excludes the Soyer HaMishtalech from the prohibition of Shechitas Chutz. Sheinu Miyuchad Lashem. It's not specified to be offered to the Almighty as a sacrifice. In fact, it's not a sacrifice. It's a we'll call it a ritual that involves this goat being sent out of the Beis HaMikdash, carrying with it the sins of Israel, but it's not offered to God as a sacrifice. The main point, though, for us is we see from this source that the exclusion of the Sar Mishalech is through the term Lashem, and not through El Pesach Oil Moyeh. The Gemara answers, Lo Kashya. Kan Kodim Hagrola, Kan La'achar Hagrola. Before the Hagrola, before the lot was drawn, it was in fact fit to be brought into the Beis HaMikdash. Therefore, if, let us say, one were to slaughter the Sar HaMishaleach, the goat, one of the two goats, before the lot was drawn, how would I know that it's not included under the Issur of Shritas Chutz? I couldn't use the Pasuk El Pesach HaMoed, because, in fact, it is fit to be El Pesach HaMoed. Therefore, I have to come on to the extra Xeris HaKosuf of Lashem to exclude it, namely, from Shritas Chutz. However, Kan La'achar Agrola, once the lot was drawn, at that point, it doesn't need to be Pesach HaMoed anymore. Therefore, I can use the term El Pesach HaMoed to exclude it from Shechitas Chutz, namely, that's after the Hagrola. The Gemara asks, well, Achar Hagrola, Nami, even if after the lot is drawn, it still is Roy for Pesach HaMoed, Ha'ika, Vidui. There is the confession that the sin confession that the Kohen Gadol recites on Yom Kippur over this particular animal. So it's still, and that confession, the Vidui, was done Pesach HaMoed. So how can you say that Achar Vidui, that after the Hagrola, Pesach HaMoed would exclude it, when in fact, even after the Hagrola, it's not excluded through Pesach HaMoed, because it still is supposed to be there. Elo Omar Rav Moni Lo Kashya. Rav Moni offers a revised answer. Lo Kashya Kan Kodem Vidui Kan Lachar Vidui. Before the Vidui, it still is Roy Lavo Pesach HaMoed, because of it needs the Vidui, it needs this confession. Therefore, if I'm going to exclude it from Shritas Chutz, I'll have to use the term Lashem. Kan Lachar Vidui, after the confession is recited, it doesn't need to be Pesach HaMoed anymore. Therefore, I can exclude it from Shechitas Chutz using the term El Pesach HaMoed Lo Hevio. When is there a violation of Shechitas? Only things that are to be at the entrance, or to be in the courtyard, or inside the Beis HaMikdash. After Vidui, this thing is not. There's no need for it to be there anymore. Hence, it would not be included in the Issur of Shechitas Chutz. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.